Your company, bankrupt. Your pension and health benefits, gone. Your state of mind, panic. What do you do? Suffering. You can't separate it from the human experience. Some people seem to glide through life unscathed, while others bear unimaginable burdens. Job's anguish of soul during his fiery trials paints a picture that cries out for the reason why. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today we're in Job chapter 29 as Dr. Lutzer continues his series, God, Why Me?, with part two of his message on the size of a suffering soul. Job is bemoaning his situation.
Verse 18, then I thought, I shall die in my nest. I'm going to die being wealthy, healthy, and wise, and I shall multiply my days as the sand, and my root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new to me, and this is the way in which I'm going to die. Oh, God, why can't it be now as it was then? And he begins to struggle with the fact that the past is gone, the glory days are gone, and look at what happens to his friends. Notice chapter 30, verse 9, he was a great hero, he was honored in the town square. Chapter 30, verse 9 says, and now I have become their taunt, I have even become a byword to them, they abhor me. And they stand aloof from me, and they do not refrain from spitting in my face. I want you to know today that your trial not only reveals a lot about you, it also says volumes about your friends. This past week, I read an entire book. You may be surprised to know that that's somewhat new for me because I have this terrible habit of reading books halfway through and then leaving them half read. And after I read it halfway through, I get reading another one and read it halfway through. But this one I read right to the end. It was given to me by Richard Dortch of PTL, and the name of the book was Integrity, as he tells the story of his own imprisonment and all that went through in all those shenanigans that we remember many years ago. But one of the things he said about him is when he was brought into prison, now here's this man who has instructed millions in righteousness on television, and there he is in jail. One of the first things that was said to him by somebody said, we're waiting for you, so you're the rat. And he was called names during his 16 months in jail and despised. And one day he walked onto a floor that was being cleaned by one of the prisoners who cursed him out. And Dortch said, with tears in my eyes, I pled for his forgiveness. And he only became more angry. But interestingly, Dortch said that very, very few friends stood with him during that calamity. Where were all the people who thought he was so wonderful when things were going well? 2 years ago, I had lunch in Los Angeles with a friend of mine who had to resign the ministry because of sin in his life. And there he was in such despair. I remember he said to me, I wish that I could find a rock that I could sit on and do nothing but meditate for a whole year and ponder the meaning of life. I mean, the man's wife had left him, the congregation he had to resign from, the job that he was involved folded. I have never seen a man in such despair. I said, are people from the church ministering to you? Are they coming? Are they praying with you? And he said, no one from the church has contacted me except one man, and that was over some legal matters. I thought, Oh, how easily we abandon our friends when they no longer make us look good and when we see in them no longer any particular use for us. Job says, the people who stood in the town square and held their mouths shut as I walked by out of adoration, they now spit in my face. He is no more of any value to us. This is known as the sigh of retrogression. Oh, that I could still be like I once was in my nest. But God has stirred up his nest, and you can't go back. One last sigh, and that is chapter 31, the sigh of betrayal. The sigh of betrayal. Job just really feels betrayed, not just by his friends, but by God. And what you do is you go through this passage, and I won't read it to you. Years ago, I preached on this, and I counted 15 times the word if occurs. Yesterday afternoon, I read it, and I could only find the word if 13 times. And I said to myself, oh, that it would be in days past when I could count up to the number 15. Oh, for those days when I could actually see clearly. But I looked at this text and I realized that what he is saying is, if I was wicked and suffering like this, I'd understand it because I'd be getting my just deserts. But I was a man who showed compassion. I'm amazed at the compassion of Job here. He said he took care of those who didn't have clothing. Let's pick it up in verse 19 of chapter 31. Chapter 31, verse 19. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or that the needy had no covering, then in effect he's saying, if this happened to me, I'd understand that I deserved it. Or let's look at verse 21. If I have lifted up my hand against the orphan because I saw I had support in the gate. Notice verse 22, let my shoulder fall from the socket and my arm be broken off at their elbow. In other words, I would be getting what I deserved if I had not been kind to the orphans, not taken care of the widows, and not done what I should do in the land. But I'm doing all these things, and God strips everything from me. He feels betrayed. Basic inequity. It just isn't fair. And you and I know that. Here are wicked people who spend their lives in the service of the devil, and they're healthy, wealthy, and wise, and they go on living. And here are people who take care of their lives, and they serve others, and they still have the flower of youth, and suddenly they are snatched away by an accident or by cancer, and the whole thing seems as if it is topsy-turvy, and there is no sense to it. So I have a question to ask you today. Where was God when all this was happening? Where was God during that deep, dark tunnel that seemed never to end? Well, I want to give you three lessons that we can learn so far, that Job was beginning to learn, and there are little bits and pieces and hints that he's beginning to learn it, even though God eventually will come on the scene. And those are the messages that I hope indeed you will be here for as God comes and finally reveals himself. But notice a number of things. First of all, suffering tests our faith. It tests our faith. Look at chapter 13, verse 15. Job chapter 13, verse 15. He makes this remarkable statement, which must have been music to the ears of our Lord. Though he slay me, I will hope in him. King James, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Do you realize how much that means to God? You see, in chapter 23, verse 10, I didn't read that far when we were looking at that great soliloquy. I wanted to save that verse until now. After he says, behold, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. When he says, I cannot find God, the very next verse says, he knows the way that I take, and when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. You say, well, Pastor Luther, why all this bit in the Bible about faith? The trial of your faith being much more precious than of gold that perishes. Everything seems to funnel in believing God and trusting him against incredible odds. Why is it so important to God that we trust him? And the answer is quite simply, God enjoys being believed. He enjoys being believed. If there's anything that delights the heart of God, it is when people believe him and believe that he is on their side, even when he appears to be doing things which are really contrary to that love. That's why faith is so precious. And what God is doing, you see, during these experiences is he is taking all of our lights and snuffing them out so that we might turn to the light of his Son. Suffering tests our faith. It kicks the props out from under us that we might look to God, and God is trying to take that faith, however small it may be, and even that faith is energized by His grace, and God says, this faith is very, very special to me. Suffering tests faith. Secondly, suffering purifies faith. It purifies it. To carry on the imagery that when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. You know that gold is separated from the ore in which it is found, little bits of gold here and there in ore, it is heated to a high temperature, and then the gold comes to the surface. But even when the gold comes to the surface and is made into a liquid, it may not yet be pure. And I'm told that one of the ways in ancient times, at least, they noticed that the gold was finally becoming purified is when it was so clear that you could look into it and it would almost be like a mirror. You could see your face. Now, that's what God does. He puts us into that kiln. He turns up the thermostat. His hand is on the thermostat. But he does it that we might be purified. And when Christ begins to be seen, when the image of Jesus is seen in our trials, God is satisfied. He is satisfied. Yesterday, my wife read a letter that came to us from some of our friends. And she read this letter to me, and I said, you know, there's a paragraph here I can use in the message tomorrow. Now, you need to understand this couple. They have children of their own, but they also adopted a child at the age of 7 1/2 who had been so terribly abused that even though they ministered to this child in great love and parental acceptance, at the age of 15, this girl had to be hospitalized. And after being hospitalized, she tried to commit suicide. And right now, even as I speak, part of her brain has been damaged. And she has been severely handicapped as a result of her attempted suicide. Also, that experience happened just as they were planning a wedding for one of their daughters. So here's the 15-year-old who tries to commit suicide, and then they have an older daughter who just days later was married. So you have this wedding going on, and you've got all of the concern and the agony that surrounds this tragedy. She says, during the month of December, I fell into depression. Well, my friend, I hope that you stay tuned, because next time I'm going to pick up the message from there, and you're going to find out what happened to this woman, and also you are going to be given a message of hope. I think the reason that God gave us the book of Job is that he knew that many of us would have similar experiences. Not in detail, but when we think about what Job endured, the suffering, the loss, and then the experience of his friends who were of no help to him, no wonder his soul was overcome by grief. But in the end, God gave him hope. And as I like to say, the sun shone again. Please stay tuned. Next time, hope to see you as we continue the series.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Erwin Lutzer has brought part two of The Size of a Suffering Soul, another message in his series, God, Why Me? Tomorrow, more of a tragic story and how God's grace can get us through tough times. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. This 8-part series can be yours on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about God, Why Me? Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Tune in tomorrow for more from the life of Job on our next Running to Win.